Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 990 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, Scott and Mr. David Palin join me for another They Don't Do That in Europe. We're going to talk about the Charm City Cyclocross Weekend and the second round of the US Cup CX. And then we're going to go over the pond and talk about Ronsa. And we do it all right at, on the money, 1 hour. So we're giving you what you want. Jam-packed show, not too much time. Got a lot of podcasts coming out, I know in quick succession, so thanks with sticking with it and getting through them. I think there's some great content out there, and I'm excited about cyclocross, and I hope you are too. And I'm putting out all this stuff so you guys can get it into your ears, share with your friends. Make sure you get the word out there about Crosshairs Radio. Would love to get those listeners back. I think some of them are still on hiatus from over the summer, but it is cross season, and we want everybody listening. Hey, Health IQ, that's our main sponsor of the Wide Angle Podium and Crosshairs Radio. And life insurance, it's not one of those things that you are buying for you, but for the ones in your life, your spouse, your dependents. It's an easy thing to put off, but it's always the first question that a financial advisor is going to ask you. Do you have life insurance? And Health IQ has made it easier for active, fit people to get better rates. And they want you to look into that now. What you can do is go to healthiq.com/CXHairs. You take a quiz. It's on cycling. It's easy. You'll do great on it because you guys know what's what in the cycling world. You're also fit. You're active. They're going to use things like your Strava files possibly and your heart rate and all these things that we care about and lead to our active lifestyle. And that's going to get you lower rates on your life insurance. So go to healthiq.com/CXHairs. Gotta have you guys do this. We need to follow up on it. Gotta make sure that they come back as sponsors so we can continue putting these shows out to you. This show and all of the other shows on the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. And that's a segue because I need you to go to wideanglepodium.com and become a member. $5 a month is the lowest level. Up from there, become a member, and then you get to be a part of some of the cool things that we're doing. We're giving away like fidget spinners every year and t-shirts and water bottles. I still have this pair. Ooh, I was supposed to do that this week and I didn't. We got to do this next time. We got to give away these socks soon. I have these Defeat World Championship one of a kind team only world champ only socks signed by Wout Van Aert, and I want you to have them, but you have had to donate to the network during our donor drive. One of those people who did that this year is going to get those socks. We'll have something cool for all of you for next year. Hey, if you need to get in touch with me, feedback@cxhairs.com. Follow along on Instagram and Twitter. Got lots of cool stuff there. I've been to a lot of races, putting out a lot of video content. I want you all to be able to see all of it. That's at cxhairs. Also go on the cxhairs YouTube page. We have content there as well. Content, content, content. Let's get to some content. Scott Diedenbach's going to take it away now for They Don't Do That in Europe, and he's going to do that right now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back for another edition of They Don't Do That in Europe. With me on my left today, Crosshairs Radio, Bill Shiken. What's going on?
Whole shot.
What was that?
I said whole
shot. Whole shot.
And with us, as you can hear, on the right, Mr. David Palin.
Hello.
How you guys doing, man? It's been so long since we've done this.
I know. It seems like just last week.
It seems like just last week.
We feel like we're hitting every lap.
Like seven podcasts ago.
Right. It's a sign. I just posted the latest Bike Shop CX this morning, and now we're recording another They Don't Do That in Europe. It's a sign that the season is full swing, man.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is.
Cross the year, I guess they say, right?
Yeah.
Bill, you're a little subdued.
No, not at all. I mean, look, the US Cup CX is over halfway done.
Yeah, which seems kind of weird, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It seems like it starts in 1 week. It's done. Yeah, it's a short series. Yeah. That's, you know.
Speaking with Trebon, he wants to spread it out more next year, make it a little longer.
Like maybe go a little further west?
No, I mean, screw those guys. No. But right. Joking.
Joking.
Yes, both.
Send those both, Twitter tweets to.
Both to those Twitter tweets. Both to Instagram. Both geographically and also calendar-wise.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, since we're talking about this, you want to just get right into Charm City?
Yeah.
We got a couple things we're going to talk about this week. Charm City and, of course, the Ronza race, the opening of the Day Vey Vey series.
Day Vey Vey.
And then, of course, we got upcoming stuff to talk about. But all right. So let's talk Charm City. Bill, you were there.
I was there.
And yes. We weren't.
No. It was. Well, I mean, the storyline leading up to Charm City was, look out for Sunday because there are torrential downpours coming and it's going to be a mud fest.
Yeah, I kind of thought it was going to be the flyover.
Oh, that was, yeah, we're getting there. Too. Let's talk about the torrential downpour that.
I kind of got that impression on social media. Everyone was like, oh, it's going to be different tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be a lot different than this. And was it?
No, it was hotter. It was more humid because it rained overnight. But here's the thing, and this is like, I think this is most of the courses that we deal with now in the U.S. since, as Arlie Kemmerer aptly put it, cyclocross is officially a summer sport. It would have had to have rained biblically for there to have been mud on that course. It's just like the 1 year there was mud at Charm City, and it's when, I don't know if you saw any pictures, but it's sort of like a bowl. Well, you were there, you know, so where the softball field is on the infield where the food trucks are.
Yep.
Like they
yep.
used to run through that. And, that's you know, a, since that that's sort of a low there. Spot, it would get a little muddy there. But other than that, I mean, the hills and the planter side and all that, you never got, you know, you would never get any real mud. So, those of us who have done that race for over a decade know that it ain't going to be muddy. You know, it'll be wet and slippery, which will be cool. And it'll be a sort of a pain to work in if it was going to be pouring down rain, but it's not really.
Yeah. And the parts of the grass that I remember, it's the grass is very thick.
It's very thick. Yeah, there are a couple little
thin little grass on dirt. It's like thick, heavy grass.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some turns in there that get slick. I mean, the little club row turn, off camber mm-hmm. turn will get slick. And then actually, what's interesting, in day two, it was. You know, slick grass did play a huge part in the men's race, but it had nothing to do with rain. But
just
we will get to that. Yeah. another new course. I mean, David alluded to it. The monster flyover that they built that was, you know, basically 21 steps, almost two stories up. And then on day one, you went straight across to the first ramp. And then on day two, you took a right turn and then went on the second ramp so they could reverse the course. And
Is that because I was wondering when I saw them building that it looked like two ramps at 90 degree angles and then a stairway coming up. I was wondering how is that going to work? So it was just different days. It went in different directions off of that flyover.
You know, originally they wanted to ride the whole thing, but it just became, I mean, that thing already, as you can imagine, cost a whole lot of money. And you would have almost had to have doubled that to have it structurally sound to ride up and down and under. So but it was neat and that's
so
that's,
is there a story behind that one, Bill? Was it like the scaffolding company a sponsor or
So there's a roofing company that is a sponsor, has been a long-term sponsor, construction company that's been a long-term sponsor of that race that now also has either owns or is affiliated with Scaffold Resource, which is put up the funds to do that. And, they loved it. You know, I sent my drone up and got them some good aerial shots of the infield and people riding over their scaffolding. So they dug it. They were very excited about it. So,
you know, and that's so cool. I think the guys were talking about this on Slow Ride today too, about how like you can just have these local companies like that, that you wouldn't even associate with bike racing. Right. But they can come in, be a sponsor, have an impact. It's awesome. And, you know, they have a impact on a local event in their community. I mean, the Avalon on a smaller scale, the pontoon boat that David announces from Musco Lighting at Jingle Cross, you know, these kind of things are everywhere, and we just maybe have to start looking for sponsors outside of the box, kind of, that
and
we're used to.
And they get the bang for their buck, but, and that's what I always love about, you know, Chris Auer and Jay Lazar and that whole 2020 cycling group is, you know, Auer is a kind of guy, he did it with Copenberg Cross too. He's like, this may cost a lot of money, this may not really make logical sense, but we're going to do it. Because it's going to, you know, it's going to make a splash. It's going to have an impact. And, you know, it may go against the grain, but that's kind of what we're all about. So that's why he did it. You know, like, could they run a course both ways without having this enormous flyover? Yeah, of course they could. But, you know, they had the opportunity to do it, so they did it.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get to a little bit of results there. On Saturday in the women's race, first place, Katie Keogh. And this is, of course, U.S. Cup, has U.S. Cup implications, correct? First place was Katie Keogh, second place, Emma White, third place, Ellen Noble, fourth place, Crystal Anthony, fifth place, Rebecca Ferringer. So that's Katie Keogh. She's running the table, right, for the women's, for the U.S. Cup?
Yeah, and she is, you know, looking at her lap times. Everybody was affected by the heat. And she claimed she was, but her and Emma White were just crushing that race. They had Ellen Noble with them for a little bit, but then it was just a two-woman team time trial there for the last three laps or so before Keogh finally dropped Emma. And, yeah, she just looks so strong, so strong.
Man, is she having a great year or what?
Yeah.
And I believe even with Emma, when Emma got second, she still held on to the. Did she hold? No, she did. She have the lead or what?
For the overall
in the U.S. Yeah,
it was a three-way tie. You know, we can talk about
that. Right,
if
that's
you want
right.
to, like, we can sort of review the results after. Well,
okay,
let's just stick with the women, and then we can go to Sundays. You know, so that was the C1 race. And this is, again, you know, we talked about it. I don't want to, like, harp on it too much, but it's just it's this weekend where nobody went home. You know, the C1 versus the C2 race had all of the same people. I don't think there was one person by choice anyway. Maybe they decided heat or whatever else they weren't going to race who did not at least start both days.
Yeah.
So why you're having this, you know, 5-point difference between the C1 and the C2 is just kind of doesn't.
Yeah,
really
I mean,
seem
we saw the same.
Sense. Maybe it's because of what's the one that only is it Louisville? That's just or the one day or Cincy.
Is two different courses.
It's Derby.
Yeah. So that maybe that's why, because that's just the C1. They don't have a affiliated C2, so they gave more points to all the C1s since it's that's the.
Oh,
seventh.
I see what you're saying.
Because there's seven the instead one. Of eight. Yeah,
it's not dramatically different, right?
No.
It's not like double points for C1 or something like
right.
that.
It's just five
more points.
Yeah,
five.
But
yeah.
Whatever. Maybe it won't even matter. But that being said, yeah, day two with the women, sort of the same story, other than. It's Keogh and then Maggie Rochette in second,
yeah.
And then Emma White in third, Carol Amani fourth, and Becca Ferringer in fifth. I think that was a more exciting race because it wasn't teammates up front. I talked to Magley after that race, and in the first day, she, like, Rochester last year has stuck with her and has changed the way that she races.
You mean the one when she was overheated?
Yeah, overheated, taken away.
Yeah,
had to go to the hospital. So on day one of Charm City, she pretty much just dialed it back because she felt herself starting to shiver during that race and overheat, and just, you know, wasn't going to push it at that point and fell way back. Really, you know, if she were able to race all the races in the U.S. Cup, that was the one that took her out of it. out of contention for it. She will miss Cincinnati since it conflicts with Canadian nationals.
Oh, that's right.
So she's
right.
So she's already out of it anyway.
Probably.
But this was a great race. You know, Keogh and Rochette were really going at it head to head. She was, you know, Magali was saying even in the second day, she was starting to overheat again. So she didn't want to take any pulls, which, you know, Katie kept trying to flick her elbow and get her to come through, and she just wouldn't do it. To the point that, you know, typical Canadian, after the race, she's like emphatically apologizing to Kehoe, who won anyway, for not, for not, you know, doing any work. And and Katie's like, well, we had two of us up there and you were by yourself. That's just smart racing. You know, don't worry about it.
There's no harm there. That's for sure. Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. That's awesome.
So, yeah.
I was just going to switch over to the men then on day one. Top five, Tobin Ortenblad. It was for second place, Jeremy Powers. Third place, Stephen Hyde. Fourth place, Kerry Werner. Fifth place, Spencer Petroff. Oh, and 14th place, Dan Chabanel.
Yeah. Best C1 result of his career.
C1 points, baby. Yeah. You had to throw that in there, man. But Tobin, you know, is continues to stay on the at the top after the Saturday racing. And then we see, you know, Powers and Spencer Petroff again getting in the top five of a C1. He's looking good, man.
Tobin,
what an opening season for Petroff, kind of making it a big splash for his first year with Aspire Racing.
Yeah, man. Just 19 years old. He's the guy. I mean, this is, you know, everybody's talking about Tobin, but if you follow the sport, Tobin's not an unknown entity. Everybody, you know, if you follow U.S. cyclocross, and even if you saw that interview I put up with him, he's even like, well, I don't know why I'm not considered a favorite. I kind of think I'm a favorite.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's cool to see him up there because it's another person. And I think it's made the U.S. Cup dynamic and exciting to watch because we have more than just Hyde or more than just Powers. And the one thing that Tobin Ortenblad did at Charm City is he blew out of the water the conventional wisdom that if you are first through the sand pit and first over the tree planter, you're going to win the race. You know, and
this is your Bill's tip, right?
Yeah, this is the sprint before the sprint, always.
Because I think you were streaming on Instagram that morning, and you were showing that. I was talking about.
Exactly
yeah,
right.
I was watching that. Yeah.
I think maybe it's time to do another type of. Maybe you could do some type of a video where you analyze tactics in a cyclocross race.
Tell me more about how that would work.
I don't know. I'm just kind of bouncing it off my head right now. But
you'd have to think of a catchy name for it.
I don't think I should, because evidently I don't know what I'm talking about because I got it completely wrong. but you talk to all the riders, they know the same. It's not a secret. And they were doing the same thing. So that Tobin, you know, had enough to come around Powers. You know, Powers, you know, gave him full credit for having the strength. And you know, Tobin's he's a crit racer as well. So, you know, it's the kind of guy you don't want to come to the line with. There was a bit of a headwind and it's uphill. So, you know, being able to sit in theoretically, if you have enough room is going to be an advantage. And Tobin did, and he was able to get around him. He also said that he put on a bigger front chain ring just for that possibility.
Ooh. Nice.
Yeah. Well, did he have that in his pit bag?
He probably had it in his pit bag. At least the mechanic did. So that was a really, really, really exciting race, you know, coming down to the line. That this group that we're starting to see more and more of with Ortenblad, Powers, Hyde, Werner, and Petrov, you know, and then Curtis White just every week just dangling off that group. And he did it again this week. He's just, you know, so we'll see. I think Curtis had a really hard road season and then school and everything. And I'll bet that, you know, we'll give him a couple more weeks and I'll bet we'll start seeing him start to creep up there.
I think you're right. I think the best is yet to come for Curtis. But, you know, we're talking about the young guys in that top five. Look at, you got Powers and Hyde, right? They're kind of considered the old guys in that group. But you got Tobin, young guy, Werner, and Petroff. I mean, that's really cool to see, right?
Yep.
That we got those three really young riders all up there pushing at the top, the pointy end of the pack every single week. And it's really, really cool. So,
and kudos to Jeff Proctor and the work that he's done, because I think right there, you're seeing the result of his hard work.
Yeah.
Partially, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. I would agree with that. And he's just a cool guy. He's so awesome. I got to talk to him at the World Cups. It was just, it was so fun, so much fun.
Yeah.
So.
Werner really in that middle ground, 27. So he's a couple years older than those guys.
True.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, I mean, 27 to 19, he's kind of at the one end, and then you got Tobin in the middle and Petrov kind of at the young end. So, all right, then we went on to the second day with the, so that left Tobin at the top of the U.S. Cup.
Tobin with a big lead, but of course, you know, Hyde always, you know, on the podium. So right there, Petrov also up there, Werner. They're all still up there. It's still this fight. Yeah, we get to day two. We should mention, you know, kind of bad luck for the Aspire team all the way around, except for Spencer Petrov. He's really the one carrying it in for Sunday. In the women's race, Ellen Noble dropped out, I think just overheating. Ended up dropping out a couple laps in, and then Powers the same in the men's race.
Yeah, I saw that he DNF'd.
And this
probably heat related too, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And this was another great race, super fast race with Hyde, Petrov, Werner, Orton, Blatt up front. Driscoll dropped a chain. He was up there as well, you know. So
and still got fifth.
Yeah, still was able to hold off. You know, got sort of a kick, pushed his bike to the pit, and still was able to get back on the course in front of Curtis White, so he didn't lose that spot. And,
I believe that happened to him at Rochester too.
Is that right?
Anyways.
But yeah, it came down to those four just killing each other for, you know, most of the race. Petrov really pushing Hyde hard, and this is where I was talking about the slick conditions. So this is, you know, what we're seeing more and more now. One, we saw it at Waterloo, and I don't think it was in Jinglemuss, definitely at Trek, where you had people around the course designated by teams dumping water on riders, right?
Yeah.
Each teams, if they had the personnel, they were going out there and kind of dumping bottles on top of their riders as they came by, and there's nothing wrong with that. Somehow, spectators have picked that up as well. And you see, like, you know, we saw even like super squirters in Waterloo, and I know Jingle people were pouring bottles on people and that kind of stuff. And I don't know how I feel about this. I don't know if it's always welcome.
Well,
I was struggling with this in Waterloo. Like, you know, not that I had a super soaker with me or buckets or anything, but I did have a water bottle with me, which I could have even refilled lap to lap. But I think it's, from personal experience, if I'm expecting it at a certain place in a race from a certain person that I spot, then it's welcome. Otherwise, it's almost a surprise. And like, who was that? And it I'd say hands off the racers.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
Yeah, I remember the same thing. I mean, when I was running, I'd never liked water dumped on me ever. You know, I really didn't like it. I think there's this misunderstanding that everyone always likes water dumped on them. And yeah, I think if you're a spectator, you should just not do that. If it's planned by your team because a rider wants it, that's great. But let's, you know, not just randomly be dumping. That's why when they do put a sprayer on the course, like they did at Trek, it's off to one side, right?
It doesn't go through the whole thing.
Yeah. If you want, you can go over and go under it. And if you don't, you just stay in the main line, and you're not going to get, I mean, you're going to get some splash up, but you're not going to go under the water. So yeah, I think that's a good point, Bill. And one question I do have to you about Sunday. Well, so was Sunday, would you say Sunday in the men's race, the pace was a lot faster just because they ran the course backwards, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it was the course, but they were definitely, I think that they were just, you know, it's like what Hyde told me. He's like, he watched Ronsa and figured that they just had to go out and race like that. He got inspired and they just had to crush it. But why I bring up the dumping of the water is that was a pivotal point of this race. So at Charm City, there's this little accordion section that sort of, or maybe like even a sine wave section where it just goes up and down and up and down. And there are little, you know, 180s up at the top of the hill, bottom of the hill, top of the hill, like three of those. At the top of one of those, there were just spectators there who were dumping water onto the riders, and it was starting to accumulate. They were doing it at a turn. So that's what I was talking
about
earlier.
That's even worse.
Right, where, you know, it was a slick turn that pretty much determined the race. So Hyde's going through there, and he was like, yeah, it felt good, but it was really getting the the grass really slick in that spot, and he ended up sliding out on it and going down. Spencer's right on his wheel and crashes into the back of him, also goes down.
Oh.
You know, and they were trading spots back and forth. Hyde is quicker up and back on his bike and gets this 2-second gap from that. And that's the race.
Yeah.
You know, it's race over. He had half a lap to go and just sprinted, you know, it out to the end. But, you know, he ended up, if you look at their lap times between Petrov and Hyde, it's like, you know, 637, 637, 657, 658, 648, 649. Go to the last lap, 649, 656. You know, it's that 5 seconds. Yeah. That's what it was.
Yep.
You know, so that's what's unfortunate about that, is it really was fans helping, trying to help, that determined that race.
Right.
Yeah, that's too bad. I hope, you know, I mean, I think it's just something to keep an eye on, because you definitely, this is the kind of thing that if we're racing in a lot more hot weather, it can get more and more. You got people with big vehicles that can carry tanks of water, you know, and next thing you know, they're parking by the course and they're dumping water on the course and trying to, I'm just spraying people off. And now you've got this huge puddle. I can completely see that happen. I've almost seen it happen already. So, yeah, it's just, God, it's something we hopefully the weather will get cooler very quickly.
Yeah.
And then we won't have to worry.
It must at some point.
Some other guys, you know, with, I think, some really good races worth mentioning. Tristan Cowie on the C1 day, coming in 7th, and then he was like 9th on the second day. So
that's a good weekend for him. Yeah.
Yeah. Guy to keep an eye on. Another young guy, Cooper Willsley, 8th, right behind Jack Kisebirth, who was 7th. And so, yeah, just like what you were saying, you know, Scott, just a lot of youngsters starting to work their way up towards the front of these races.
That's cool. Well, I mean, it seemed like a great event. You know, it was, I was kind of wishing I was there. I was glad I didn't have to drive there, but at the same time, I was wishing I was there.
It was good. You know, that's, you know, as you all know, it's one of my favorites. Between that and DCCX, those two really are the ones, you know, nearest and dearest to my heart. I've been at, I think, Charm City every year since it started 11 years ago. So to see it grow like this, and really, it's one of those things that what's really satisfying about it is everybody goes away with a good feeling about it. The racers love it. They love the production value and just how well everything's done, you know. And even all the amateurs racers, it's now part of the series that I'm the director of. So it's sort of cool to bring them into the fold for that. So now we have two UCI races between Charm City and DCCX in the Bike Reg Super Series. So that's kind of neat as well. And it's just, it makes us really proud that we're able to have that pro of an event, you know, and bring people in from all over the country for it.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool stuff. Now, one of the things, you're going to love this segue. One of the things Charm City did not have was Katie Compton.
No, but we should talk about the U.S. Cup. It was an amazing segue, but we should talk about the U.S. Cup overall first.
We probably should.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought we kind of did, but yes.
Let's edit that back later into it, huh?
What did you want to talk about? Oh, the final overall after the entire Charm City weekend. How are we looking, Bill?
Well, let's start with the women, and in the women's U.S. Cup standings last week after KMC, there was a 3-way tie at the top, which was pretty exciting. So you had Katie Keogh, Emma White, Magli Rochette, all were tied.
Right.
Katie Keogh now has, you know, taken a little bit of a lead. She has 280 points. Emma White has 265 points. And Maggie Rochette has 225. We already know that Rochette is going to miss Cincinnati.
Right.
So she's kind of done.
Yeah.
Becca Farringer is in 4th place, you know, so most likely tied with now Ellen Noble.
Okay.
I'm sorry, tied with Crystal Anthony. Ellen Noble's farther down. Yeah, Ellen dropping out sort of hurt her chances. I would say that those four, you know, if we take Rochette out of it, are the ones still with a shot. And you get 70 for a win, right?
Right.
So, I mean, Keo, if Keo's consistent, it's really between her and Emma White. And then your outliers really are Farringer and Anthony.
And yeah, something special would have to happen right for them to really. But yeah, like you said, they're still within long range, but they're still there.
Yeah, yeah. And it can happen. I mean, look at Ellen. I mean,
sure.
It stinks for her, but she wasn't able to finish that race, and that's you know, she was looking at 45, 40, 65 points. You know, she was consistently getting points, and then it just kind of ends. So yeah. As much as I still don't think winner take all is the best way to do it, it's setting up perfect. And I told Ryan that I was like, you could not ask for anything better than this.
I can just see him like sitting there smiling, like, oh, what
kind of smug.
This was my plan all
exactly
along.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all right, well,
and
that's great.
Yeah, and then we move over to the men, and it's just as exciting over there. I mean, you had Tobin Ortenblad, who was just dominating this thing and continues to I mean, he's won three of them, but then he dropped down to only get 55 points in that last one. You have
with a fourth place.
Hyde hasn't gone any lower than 60. So He's only 15 points behind Tobin now. So Tobin's leading with 275 points. Hyde is right there with 260 points. Kerry Werner has 230 points. And then Spencer Petrov has 210 points. Again, you know, in a C1, you have 70 points for the winner, 5-point increments down for the C2. I'm sorry, 75. And then for the C2, 70 and down. So all of those guys are still in it. Even Curtis White at 200 points has an outside shot, you know, at that money. I think Driscoll down there at 165, probably a much harder get for him at this point. But that
relies on the guys above them doing quite poorly.
Yeah,
they have
exactly
to do more than just do well themselves. The guys above them need to do poorly.
Yeah, and you know, I think this was Tobin's goal. I mean, I think he peaked for this U.S. Cup to do what he was saying, you know, when I talked to him, you know, it's put himself on the map, not be this seen as an underdog or an outsider anymore. And if he, you know, takes home $10,000, he's also, you know, running his program out of a rental truck right now. So that could help.
Yeah. $10,000 helps that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think this is why we saw him ride the way he was riding at the World Cups. I mean, at those weekends, he was doing all the races. He was doing everything. He was going deep every single chance he had because he's looking down the road. I also think he's really eyeing U.S. Nationals. I think that's another thing he's really looking at. He's got a lot of time between the end of the series and U.S. Nationals to recoup and come back at it again. And I think this season for Tobin has just been great. The way he's planned it out and the way he's executing it is just amazing. And he's done a heck of a job. So
yeah,
I love that guy.
And I also think that when we look at who we thought were going to be the favorites, when you look at Hyde and you look at Powers, I think both of those guys right now, I get the feeling and sort of talking to them a little, but you know, they won't necessarily say it. I don't think they're anywhere near peak at this point. I think they're both a little behind, maybe even where they want to be fitness wise. So still good things to come, I think, from both of those guys. And what you were saying before, you know, the revelation, and I think the name that is on all of these older guys' tongue is Spencer Petrov, and he's the one that I think everybody's going to need to worry about as this season goes on.
Yeah, because those young guys tend to recover really quick from each of those really hard efforts.
Exactly. And on the right course, you got a fast course, and Spencer is extremely dangerous.
And the difference, and we see it with all the Euro pros. We see it with, like, we could even go to somebody like Ellie Easerbeat in Iowa. Spencer is able now to race 60 minutes, you know, and it's that 10 minutes at the end that we always see where those young guys kind of falter when they move up at first, you know, Vanderpool and Van Aert excluded. It's making it to be able to race through that entire hour and even maybe a little more. And I think that's where Spencer has really, you know, shown that he's ready to compete with these guys.
And think about too, where the last two U.S. Cup race venues are, Cincinnati and Louisville.
Right. Like hometown Spencer, races for him.
Like his backyard. And DeVue is where Spencer won the Pan Am race for us. That one year, right. I mean, I think he was ahead of Gage by like 140 or something crazy like that. So he's very fast on that course. So, yeah, a lot of exciting stuff to look forward to. And it's just awesome. This is exactly what we wanted this series to do, man.
Yeah, completely.
You know, is create this kind of stuff for us to talk about and wonder about. And it's just added a whole nother element to the season. So that's been awesome. So, all right. Are we ready for Ranza?
Tell me about Katie Compton.
This is the new. This is a series. What's this series called, David?
Dave, baby.
Yes. Katie Compton. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, so, all right. Women's race, Dave, baby. Let me just go through the top five. First place was Katie Compton. Second place, Maud Captains. Third place, Helen Wyman. Fourth place, Nikki Bramier. Fifth place, Alice Marie Arzufi from Italy. What's really cool is, you know, the last weekend before this, we saw Maud Captains basically ride away from everyone and take that win. You remember that in the Super P race? And basically she does the same thing this week, except Katie Compton is riding away from her as well in front of her and was just, I mean, just a machine. I mean, she just was hitting every single turn perfectly, going through that course like. I mean, just she was reminded me of Katarina Nash at Jingle Cross, right? I mean, you remember how we were talking about that, Bill?
Yeah.
How Katarina just looked so smooth like that. That's how Compton looked.
Every week we get on here and we sing the praises of the women's field. Look at the parity. Look how exciting it is. Look how anybody can race, win every other week. And then Katie Compton has to show up and just run away with it. And
she's
ruin
ruining
everything.
Racing for everybody.
She is.
She really is. Yeah. When is she going to retire already?
She just stayed at home.
She was afraid because of the high quality racing on the East Coast.
Right.
With that mediocrity on the West Coast. She figured I better just go to Europe.
Oh,
sorry.
Man.
Just tweet those angry tweets to at CX Hears.
At Bike Shop CX.
Slow Ride Pod.
Just so everybody knows, he's kidding.
Thank
he's
you.
She won this one early. I mean,
it was over. Yeah, it was over.
It was awesome.
Another really cool thing to see, Helen Wyman. It was a very cool race between her and Nikki Bramier. Helen basically outrunning her on the run-up, you know, putting the bike on the shoulder. And that last lap, we were talking about it on Twitter as it came. Everyone's like, it's going to depend on the run for third place, you know, and Nikki Bramier got to it first. She's struggled with her running all the way back to Worlds, you know, a couple years ago. And Helen Wyman just pulls up on the hill, throws the bike on her shoulder, and just outruns her up the hill, catches her, and goes on and takes third place to get that final podium spot. The other notable thing on this race is the DNF by Kant. I was reading about it. She went to see a GI specialist. Something is wrong with her stomach. She's talking like she can't even hardly eat. You know, and she's having,
she was in the ER the night before is what I understand. Yeah.
She's having these stomach problems that are really bad. The fact that she DNFs, just like we were talking about with the US Cup, Bill, you know, that means she loses 5 minutes automatically in the Deveve series. So that's going to be tough to come back from. But even more importantly, I hope this is something physically, you know, she can get worked out because I mean, That's big trouble if she can't get that under control and, you know, goes a few weeks or something or whatever and can't get this get that straightened out. That would be a terrible thing to happen. Terrible for her. Terrible for, you know, just the excitement of what we get to watch at the races. So I really hope that gets straightened out and the GI specialist can come up with something to solve that for her.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. You know, interestingly, too, you talked about Helen Wyman. If you look at third, fourth, and fifth, those are sort of the comeback kids in this race. And it's awesome to see all three of those doing well. So you had Wyman, who had that, you know, really bad crash and injury that took her out of most of last season. You had Nicky Bramier, same thing, right? You know, bad crash was out for a long time. Alice Maria Arzufi, remembering Worlds, how hard she went down, how scary that was, having to get, you know, taken off the course on a stretcher.
On the board,
So
like lifted over the side.
So to see all three of them after these really horrific crashes last year, right up there at the top and being able to return to racing at such a high level is great to see. And then I think, you know, they're in sixth place, still just 22 years old and, you know, a world championship already. And I think it's going to be threatening for some elite podiums as well as Anne-Marie Wurst. You know, she's, she's, I think she's had a little bit of bad luck in some of these races, you know, especially with Kant running into her last week. I think she's going
to
be up there.
Go all the way to seventh place. Sophie DeBoer is no slouch herself.
Yeah.
But what's going on with Sophie DeBoer? Anybody? I mean, she's, I mean, not that seventh is anything bad or anything, but we haven't seen her.
She was at the top last year, right?
Yeah. And we just aren't seeing that this year. I don't know if, you know, the whole program switching up on her is, you know, taken away from her concentration. Who knows? I mean, who knows? But yeah, it'd be nice to see her. I mean, like I said, not that seventh is anything bad, but we're used to seeing her pushing the top. The top people. So we'll see. We'll see what's going on with that. And hopefully
it's early still.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, and then, all right. Anything else about the women's race that anybody wants to mention? It was a great race. Overall, great race. What a cool course, too.
That course doesn't it look like an amusement park just when you see it?
Yeah.
Like a cyclocross amusement park.
Yeah.
Right. In the women's race, I was like, it's okay looking. But then in the men's race, they've got different angles that they show in the men's. I don't know. Do they turn on more cameras, Bill, you know, or
probably
something?
Yeah.
Because
here's a question for you.
Yeah.
For both you guys. And it helps us with a segue from the women's race to the men's race. There's a hole in that course with that left turn coming in. I don't even know where to describe it in the course, but it seemed that everyone on that course dismounted. And I know that you can never see the real angle and these, especially the adverse cambers, the off cambers there. But there was a hole in which everyone dismounted, held on to the post at the top of that corner on the hard left turn before kind of daintily walking across there or running across there and then remount for the right turn out of that hole and back down.
I think
it's where Sonic Kant actually fell in the race.
I think also it's much more of an adverse camber and steep than it looks like on TV, if it's the place I'm thinking about.
Yeah, it is. And what I found really significant was in, I believe it was the second lap, everyone dismounted in both the women's race and the men's race, except the second lap of the men's race, there was one Dutchman that did not dismount going through that turn.
Yeah, I know. I know exactly where you're. And that's the kind of, we've had like muddy Ronces before, and those are the races that are just insane for that section.
Yeah.
And it just
There was actually, a couple laps where he rode that when everyone else ran it.
Yeah.
Yep. And he made time on people when he did.
Yeah.
And just to go back to the bike shop show days, Scotty D, do you remember we talked about GP Mario Leclerc when one Thomas Mewson slid down like three tiers of that adverse camber switchback and he slid under the barriers as he went down and the race was so muddy. I always think about that when I watch this course.
Oh, that was that year was just intense. There's one of those videos that you were talking about analyzing races that may have covered that one.
Yeah.
If you go back into the archives.
Yeah. What is it called? Like the Muse News or something like that.
Yeah.
It's about Thomas Mewson, Muse News.
If you do that, Bill, you should make t-shirts.
Okay.
I think
good sellers. Okay.
Well, that's
all right.
Funny.
So,
how did
Matthew Vanderpool win this week?
Let's talk about the men's race. Top five, number one, Lars Vanderhaar.
What?
Number two, Matthew Vanderpool. Number three, Wout Van Aert. Number four, Kevinth Powells. And number five, Tone Aerts. This race was incredible. I mean, Lars had the lead at the beginning, and then, you know, we get the usual Vanderpool, and then Wout comes up, you know, and is riding behind him. And then the two of them, Vanderpool and Van Aert, start swapping punches, going back and forth. And holy cow, was that exciting. I mean, there was times Wout's putting in a move, you know, you could see him, you know, making an effort, putting in a move. Vanderpool, you know, typically is kind of sitting back there just like, floating along on the course, I'll catch up when I get to it, you know. But they would come back together, and you would think, oh, okay, that Wout just did it. He's not going to be able to, you know, Vanderpool's going to ride away from him again. But then they would stay together, and Wout would go again. And finally, Lars waited until his moment and just went, and it was amazing. And everybody was going crazy.
Sort of.
What did you get? Yeah. Well, I know you were, David. Lars is your pick every week.
He's not my pick every week, but he certainly is often my pick. And from the get-go, I actually tweeted out, go Lars. I really, and especially when I was seeing him riding that, he just had something special this week. And then as the race progressed and I was doing some in-race analysis without the advantage of slow-mo and rebroadcasts. But there was one Tune Aerts who's spending a lot of time dragging the chase group, most notably Lars Vandehaar, back up to Wout and Matthew. And I think that this week, of course, I don't know for sure what the team discussion was, but it appeared that this week was about a team race more so than the usual individual races out there. Or if my team guy is up the road, I don't mind blocking back here with a brake check or something. But it really appeared that Tune Aerts was working to really keep Lars Vandehaar in this race.
Go ahead, Bill.
It's, you know, people talk about spoilers. Oh, I don't want to know who won. Don't tell me who won. You know, I'm going to go on Twitter or Facebook and you know, nobody should say a word about the race. You guys aren't allowed to talk about it. I personally don't care. And I knew who won the race before I watched. And for me, it was exciting because, unlike David, I was skeptical even knowing who was going to win the race. And early in the race, I'm like, because I'm looking at it for him. Then I'm like, where the hell is Lars? And he's like seventh place.
Right. You know, like, how is he going to do this?
All the way back there, I'm like, how is he going to get up there? And this is like with three laps to go. And you're right. I mean, they were just like destroying each other. And then with two laps to go, Lars is up there. They are crossing the finish line. And Wout and Matthew are like, you know, got like saliva hanging out of their drool. And they're like staring at each other, you know, just like mad dogs. And Lars is like, smell y'all later. And just takes off the front. And Vanderpool doesn't even look forward. He's just looking behind him saying, all right, who's going to go get him? Who's going to go get him? It looked like a road race. Who's going to go get him? And
I don't know if you could see from that angle, though, but what actually happened was Matthew and Wout had sat up and did rock, paper, scissors to determine who was going to chase them. But they didn't get it out quick enough because they both put out rocks first. And then at that point, Vandehaar was
gone. And so
they had to do all
the way Ronso works, you know, you have your starting stretch and then it makes kind of that 180 onto the cobblestone section. And which is always at the start, that's always the first bottleneck. I mean, that's pretty much where the race is decided for the leaders. And by the time he makes that turn and is out of sight, he's like 6 seconds ahead just from the move, and it's done. You know, there was nothing they could do from that point on. So, you know, I think that A, Lars is finally working himself into shape, but B, he got a huge assist from Vanderpool and Van Aert, just really more worried about their interpersonal rivalry than chasing down the guy that was going to win the race.
Which is genius on his part to win that race by, you know, letting those two look at each other.
Yeah.
And I don't know what European paper it was, but I was reading it and, you know, basically the quote from Wout was, you know, look, he's won everything this year. He's the one that should chase him. And then the quote from Matthew was, look, he hasn't won anything yet this year. He's the one,
he's the one that you're chasing.
That's awesome. I agree with both of those.
I know. So, I mean, that's what really, you know, if they had maybe split the rest of the races this year, they might have both gone right after him. But the fact that they're so, like, so far apart in what their season has been this year kind of leads to them both sitting there. So the other thing I want to mention too, we're really seeing Tone ride, especially at the beginning of this race, we're seeing Tone Aerts riding with those two a lot this season.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We saw it over here. We saw it in this race. That guy has got some speed and some strength that I think one day he's going to unleash again, and we're going to see lots of good things from him. I'm very impressed
by him.
Did
something happen?
I really like watching him.
Did something happen to Swick during that race? I didn't see it. Did he have a mechanical or anything?
He had like a little crash all by himself, right, okay. David?
Where they come down off that hill, and it comes is the surface change from the muddish to the pavement, but people go beyond the pavement up onto that little
area. That is the famous Stibar Brap section.
Yep.
Stibar Brap.
Where he would come off of that and then just like accelerate away from everyone on that little muddy section.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and he went down there and he had to like his chain came off and he had to mess with it for a while, and by that time
I was
so
seeing him
back
down in ninth, which is not where we're used to seeing him.
I tell you what, like I tweeted out, man, if we see a better race than this season, we're going to be in for a treat, man. So I can't wait. So either way, this was just a pivotal race. I think it was an extremely fun race to win. And like you say, Bill, this is a week where the men's race is, there's parity in the men's race and not as much parity in the women's race. the opposite of what we typically see. So, really cool.
Which
really
is good. Cool. If we get both those like that, it'd be awesome. Looking at the U23s, our boy Jens Dekker holding on to that
second place.
Easerbeet gets the win.
Yep. And Yannick Peters in third. So three guys that I think we're going to be seeing a lot from soon.
Yes. That U23 is going to get very intense, and it's going to be great coming into Worlds for that, for sure. So, all right, guys, anything else we want to talk about the men's race at Ronza?
Nope.
What do we got upcoming this weekend? Of course, in the U.S. here, there's this Gloucester, I think it's pronounced, David.
Gloucester.
Yes, that's a double C2 weekend. Also, out west, kind of center of the country, in Boulder, is the U.S. Open of Cyclocross, also a double C2. So that's what we got going on in the U.S. I love weekends like this when we've got split fields like this, people going everywhere, and it's really exciting, and it has there's a lot of racing to watch, and it gives lots of other riders chances to move up, and we see things that we don't normally see in the bigger races. So I really like weekends like this. And then October 15th, we've got the Zonhoven Super Prestige coming up this weekend. So those will be the races that we'll probably be talking about on the next show. Anything else? And then a weekend after that is DCCX, correct, Bill?
That is correct. Yeah.
Are you ready?
Oh yeah.
Ready. You've already got the course built, right?
We know where it's going to be built. Got some stairs there. It's all been mowed. And I'll be up in New York City on.
Oh yeah, tell us about that.
Thursday of this week, if you are tuning in, well, today, which will be Wednesday.
So you're going to be there Thursday, like this Thursday.
Yeah,
like
tomorrow. Two days as we record tomorrow, as you're listening, if you're downloading right away, we're doing another podcast with the Aspire team. So Jeremy will be up there, Spencer and Ellen, all in the Rafa clubhouse. Love for you all to come down and hang out with us if you're hearing this before it happens, or even if you're hearing after it happens, go to the Rafa clubhouse and just pretend like we're there. You could just download it and listen to it and then just sit in there. It's like a museum tour.
Man.
Yeah. Bill, you should give out the secret handshake or the secret password so people can get in the club.
Okay. No, I can't do that online. They'll ban me. You know, and all right, then, guys. Actually, speaking of Rafa and DCCX, we're also going to have our bib pickup and a little get together in the DC Rafa pop up. So that's happening for DCCX as well.
Is it? When is that? What day is that going to be?
That will be Friday. So the 20th. I think.
Is that in the evening on Friday?
Yep. It'll be evening packet pickup at the Rafa pop-up in Georgetown.
That will be amazing. So, all right, Bill. Well, if people want to get in touch with you, where's the best place they can do it?
Well, there are a number of places, Scott. They can email all of us, but I'll be the one that gets them, at feedback@cxhairs.com. They can call the helpline, 405-CX-HAIRS. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at CXHairs, also on Facebook, and I think that's it. Oh, yeah. Hey, thank you so much. I jokingly said, you know, if you just want to donate some money to the cause, you know, you can do that on Venmo, also at CXHairs, and somebody did. I got $5.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
That's awesome. So thank you.
That is awesome.
I appreciate that.
All right, and Mr. David Palin.
Mr. David Palin on the tweets and on the instance.
It's so complicated.
And Mr. David Palin, pretty straightforward. Spell it correctly.
You can get a hold of me, Scott Diedenbach, at BikeShopCX on Twitter or at CyclocrossNet on Twitter. Or send us an email for the Bike Shop CX show, BikeShopShow@gmail.com, and we will read your tech questions on the air in that podcast. So, all right, guys. Well, thanks for being with me again. It's so cool that we're on a weekly, kind of a weekly schedule, and hopefully we can get it in next week. Schedules, if our schedules cooperate.
I know I am just, there's a deluge of Crosshairs Radio podcasts. Sorry, not sorry. Also have like Michael Vandenham and Dylan Poste that needs to get up there from the Easton Garneau team. And then also we'll have that Rafa one up too. But hey, y'all need to do some more driving, some more time on the trainer.
Y'all need to be driving to DCCX.
That's right. And I can also do a 6-minute intro if I wanted to and still be under an hour for this show. That's nice. Just right. All there. Right. That's a win for everyone. We need to shut up and just get off the air now.
We nailed this one. All right, guys. Talk to you next time.
All right. Bye.